it's like politicians, you know, they make all these promises, but then do they really get the job done? Do you go back and evaluate that? No. But we're gonna hold our feet to the fire at the end of this.
My only value is really carrying lights and carrying cameras and things like that. But it gave me the entree into the being around the NFL.
I grabbed some jeans I thought were $30. That's what it said.
Yeah.
Ring them up, $4.80. Welcome into the lounge for another episode of Predictions. But this is season-long predictions, not just 53-man roster predictions, which, Garrett, before we get started here, I need to do a little not-so-humble bragging.
Gloating?
That I destroyed you on the 53-man roster.
You did win the 53-man roster. I'll give it to you.
By two.
Yeah, it wasn't my best showing. I wish I would have thought through some things a little bit more. We both missed Maurice Kennedy, which wouldn't have...
That was just... Yeah,
we missed on that. We knew how that was going to play out. You could just see that, you know, that Ravens had said.
Yeah, we forgot the rule that he has to stay on the active roster for a day. Yeah.
So, and then kind of a crazy weekend. Lots of two trades, offensive line changed.
Yeah.
And then, for the record, had I made the predictions after Thursday's game with Bam Bradley, I would have put him on the roster. He had a great game on Thursday.
Well, so. I saw that coming. Prophetic.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. But had I seen that, I would have put him on the roster. So that's really basically a wash there.
Yeah, sure. Ed Melee versus Larry Donnell.
I give you credit on that one. I didn't see that.
Yeah, you know it, buddy. But with that said, we're going to get into bigger predictions for the entire season. And we're going to come back at the end of the year and get back into these and really hold ourselves accountable. You know, it's like politicians. You know, they make all these promises. But then do they really get the job done? Do you go back and evaluate that? No. But we're gonna hold our feet to the fire at the end of this. And on the front end, we brought in a special guest to kind of be the arbiter, the judge on who he thinks is gonna be right by season's end. And that is none other than Evan Washburn of CBS fame. He's everywhere, man. This guy, I'll tell you what, his career, impressive, impressive. And he's the host of Unscripted, so he has to keep us knuckleheads in check on that. As well as Ravens Report, you have a role on this year?
Yeah, we're gonna be doing some interviews. And I think that's where my experience really comes in, is Unscripted, having to sort of mediate the wackiness that is mostly Mink, and then Garrett comes in. But then what Garrett does, which is subtle, is that his presentation is so polished, but at times he's saying just as ridiculous a thing as Mink. It's just not covered with all the screaming and hand movement.
Yeah, lots of chopping and just craziness. Yeah.
And basically, we have these conversations, as we do Unscripted every week, we have these conversations on set, but then also like during break is where we have some of the best conversations. So we're going to try to take some of those conversations and bring them here to the Lounge Podcast and share that with our listeners today.
Yeah.
But real quick, Ryan, before we get into the conversation with Evan and the predictions, we want to tell our fans about the Ravens Flock Special from Papa John's. You can order the Ravens Flock Special all season long, get a large specialty pizza and a large two-topping pizza with the promo code RavensFlock at papajohns.com. And the day after every Ravens win, so this Monday after beating the Cincinnati Bengals, use the promo code RAVENS50 to get 50% off regular menu price online order with that Ravens promo code RAVENS50 at papajohns.com.
So let's kick it off with predictions. You ready to do this?
I'm ready. Let's get into it.
All right. Who will be the defensive MVP this year? Garrett?
I think it's going to be Eric Weddle. I thought last year, Eric Weddle, you just saw the difference in the secondary, the defense as a whole with him back there. And now I think the Ravens have the other pieces around him with Tony Jefferson, with Jimmy Smith healthy, with Brandon Carr, with Marlon Humphrey. Like, they have all the pieces necessary on defense but it's still Weddle is like the driver of the ship back there.
Right.
And I think
he's the puppet master.
He is, and I think that he makes plays. He's the guy that's in the forefront. He's the guy that often people go to in the media for interviews because he's such a good quote. He gets his hands on the football. So I'm going to go with Weddle.
I'm going to go with C.J. Mosley.
It's a good pick, yeah.
I think that he is prime. I mean, Weddle says, you know, he's just now entering his prime. I'm going to go C.J., who is years-wise in age just entering his prime. And I think he's going to show up more because Zachary Orr is not next to him anymore. I think that he's going to have to carry a bigger burden. You know, Orr led this team in tackles last year. I think that this year it's going to be C.J. Mosley. He made 4 picks last year, could have had more, could have had a touchdown against the Redskins.
Don't bring that one up. That one's painful.
But I think that it's going to become even more clear this year that C.J. Mosley is the star of the Ravens defense.
Well, it's difficult to be the arbiter because you guys watch this team more than anyone I know. But my gut tells me that C.J. Mosley will probably grab whatever this award is. But I think we also have to decide who's evaluating this award. Because those right. that truly know football, whether it be the Pro Football Focuses of the world, the coaches tape, all those things, I think you have to give it to somebody up front because Mosley's going to benefit from what this defensive line can do. Right. And that's the strength of this defense.
Yeah.
And it's a group, so it's hard to give it to one guy. Is it Brandon Williams? Is it Michael Pierce? I think Brent Urban's a name that's going to probably pop up a lot this
yeah,
year.
Right.
But I think C.J. Mosley might benefit from it. But the flip side to that, to give Weddle a shot in this department, will if teams can't run and that just becomes something they're going to have to deal with early in a game, they're going to start chucking the ball around. And
yeah,
that
right.
gives a guy like Weddle much more of an opportunity. I think both good candidates, but I think C.J. Mosley, based off of the way this defense looks to be shaping up, is probably going to have the gaudier numbers.
Right, right. Well, I'm up 1-0.
Early lead.
The early,
early
lead. And
lead.
The,
we don't.
I'm seeing the score. I'm tallying this up.
Well, look, at the end of this, it's not Evan that is
this
judge
is a true tally.
Ultimate, it's at the end of the season is when we really
exactly.
come up with a true tally here.
It's a preseason favorite, you know. It's like the power rankings, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see if I am ahead of you in the power rankings.
Right, and it's like they always say, there's been no preseason number one team that's like ever won the college football national championship. That's kind of where
I'm
you are right
up
now.
I'm only 1-0, all
right? That's where
don't
you are
get,
right now.
Don't get your panties all twisted, all right? Jeez. All right, so who will be the offensive MVP?
Who do you think?
I'm going Danny Woodhead.
Because I'm hating how much I'm starting to agree with Brian.
Yeah!
But I haven't heard his argument yet.
I think that, as we'll get into, I think Danny Woodhead's also going to lead this team receptions. Spoiler alert for a later question.
Yeah.
And I just think that he's going to be the straw that stirs the drink for this offense. I think he's going to be a guy that picks up a lot of first downs. I think he's going to get a lot of touchdowns this year. I think he's going to be Joe Flacco's safety valve. I mean, let's be honest. He lost 2 of the guys that he trusted the most as targets on this offense, Dennis Pitta, Kyle Juszczyk. I think Danny Woodhead's the next guy that Joe's going to put his trust in.
I think that Danny Woodhead's going to have a really good season. I don't think he's going to be the MVP. If you look throughout Danny Woodhead's career, he's never been an offensive MVP caliber player at any of the places he's been.
Has he played on better offenses than he's playing on currently, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's been overshadowed by other stars.
Oh, that's your point.
Yeah. I'm saying he's previously been overshadowed by other offensive stars. I don't know that here he's going to be overshadowed as he was in New England or even by Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I don't necessarily buy that argument when you look at where he was. I understand New England, that's a different beast, but when you look at where he was in
San Diego.
And he
barely played New England.
Right, it's not like he had a huge role there. The Jets.
Did he? Oh, that was like his first.
I know.
That was like his rookie year and he wasn't barely on the field.
My pick would be Mike Wallace. He was a 1,000-yard receiver last year. If you want to talk about someone that Joe Truss throwing the ball to Mike Wallace. He's the number one receiver on this depth chart, and I don't see any reason why he can't go out there and have 1,000 receiving yards again. I mean, I think that he will. Spoiler alert for a later question, I think he's going to lead the team in receiving yards. And I just don't, with Danny, I think he's going to be really good, but to say that he's going to be the straw that stirs the drink for this offense, I think that's putting a little too much stock in that.
And I'll take this angle to this because, yes, Woodhead was the name that came to mind when I thought offensive MVP, but twofold. What does that say about your offense? If a guy that is the check down, sort of the safety valve, all the things you brought up, the 70 catch guy, if he's your MVP, there's much bigger problems to what's going on offensively. I think if you're a Ravens fan or you're part of this coach, you hope that Joe Flacco is your offensive
for
MVP.
Sure.
And he's such a mystery right now based off of his back injury. But I think if you want to forecast or try to predict, hey, what makes this team the best they can be and what gives this offense the best shot? It has to be a guy like Joe or, you know, Mike Wallace falls into that category a bit.
Right.
I think that if you have Danny Woodhead as your offensive MVP, then you're talking about an offense that, again, is in the bottom half of the league.
Yeah.
But if this is strictly a prediction-based game we're playing right now, and based off of all that we know at this point, which is very little,
then I'm up 2-0.
I think that that's a safer pick.
Yeah,
I don't think it's the right pick.
That's a 2-0.
You know what you know, it's offensive MVP, so I couldn't take this guy, but I think we probably agree that if we're just thinking points MVP.
Oh, I like this. I like where he's going.
Yeah.
Yes. If you go that way, then I think that.
No, that's illegal.
It's as much
as. That's illegal. You would never vote for Justin Tucker as your offensive MVP.
We talked about it last year on the show, in a real way.
He probably is the best offensive weapon.
That's what I'm saying.
And when you think about value because of what it allows this team to do on both sides, they can take risks on defense that they wouldn't necessarily take because it's a field position game mm-hmm. that they play better than anyone in the NFL because of Justin and because of Sam.
Right. Let's be honest. If you start on the 25, right, each drive you just kneel it down in the end zone. How many yards do you need to get get points out of the drive?
You honestly need like 30 yards, 35 yards. That's right. You know, so that's like two nice passes, two 15-yard chunks to Mike Wallace, and all of a sudden you're
in
field goal
Tucker.
Range.
He's not going to win, but we'll have this conversation.
We're rephrasing it as who will be the MVP of the best means of scoring points, then yes, I agree, Justin Tucker.
What's the goal of an offense?
Welcome to my side here, guys. Oh, wow. Come on in. There's plenty of room on my bandwagon.
I'll give you maybe a half point for that game. Maybe a half point.
You could be scoring a prediction-based segment.
No, I'm scoring it. All right, next is who will be the breakout player of the year? I think this one's interesting.
It is interesting. I'm going to go defense. Here.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go Matt Judon.
Me too.
Did I take that?
Me too.
I got somebody else. Let's hear your combined case for Matt Judon.
I'm guessing we're probably on the same page. I'll be quick. I think that Judon, he is in position to have serious production in terms of a sack standpoint, and that's something that we all pay attention to.
Yeah.
He was somebody that impressed us last year. He's going to be a starter this year, so he's going to have more reps.
It's a combination of talent and opportunity. Right?
He has it.
Exactly. Yeah. He has it now. I think he's a very talented player going into his second year. He knows the game a lot better. He's very athletic. He trimmed down. He's faster. I think he's going to have a lot of chances to make plays.
And the Ravens also have more pass rushers around him,
yep.
around that group as a whole, so all of them are going to be fresh, and I think that's going to help everybody as a whole.
I think Judon's a great call. The name I immediately thought of, and maybe prisoner of that one game that I saw in preseason game number one, but I think Brent Urban could have that Michael Pierce, Brandon Williams type breakout where, again, the numbers might not reflect it if you're just going through the box score, but if you're of that analytics or somebody that studies the tape and coaches rave about him when you meet with him, I think if he can stay healthy and avoid some of those nagging things that he's just a freak.
He is.
I mean, he's just a bigger body. And learning his background about how he played hockey, you can see that in the way that for a big guy, he has complete control of his movement. And there's no wasted movement. And now you see the confidence start to match where he is physically, and I think he's a guy that could be a game wrecker along that front.
Yeah, they want him to be Brent Keisel. They want
him to be which I think is a good comparison.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who shuts down the run game, gets some pressure on quarterbacks. I think he could be very good this year. I like that pick.
He's in a contract year, and often that can be a motivator as well.
Can I toss out one other name for breakout player of the year?
Sure.
James Hurst, my guy. Friend of the lounge.
He is a friend of the lounge. How many times are you going to insert this guy into every conversation?
Every podcast episode.
God.
I'm devoted to it. All right, last. Who will be the best rookie?
I kind of struggle with this one because I love Marlon Humphrey. I think Marlon Humphrey's really good. I just don't know that he'll play enough to be that guy. So I go to Tyus Bowser, and I'll probably say Tyus Bowser. I think that he's also going to have a really big role. He's one of those, when I mentioned there's all these young pass rushers around Suggs and Judon, Bowser is the guy that I'm thinking of, you know, really there. So I want to say it's Bowser. He is really athletic. He can play, drop into coverage. He's shown flashes the ability to do that. He knows how to get after the quarterback. I want to say Tyus Bowser.
I'm going to go with Marlon Humphrey.
I know. I love Humphrey. I struggle with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Humphrey, in one way or another, is going to see a decent amount of snaps. You know, there will be injuries at cornerback. Maybe not Brandon Carr, the Iron Man of the NFL, but you're telling me you think Jimmy's playing all 16? I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah.
But I knock on wood, but I just don't see it happening. I mean, it's been a struggle for Jimmy, and I think Marlon's going to get on the field at some point because of injury or whatnot, and I think he's going to play really well. He could get on the field just because he's playing so well, and maybe Brandon is giving up some yards. It would not shock me if midway through this year, they say, all right, Marlon, you're going to be our starter now, opposite of Jimmy. Right.
Wouldn't shock me. And I think that I think Marlon might be one of your, might be your best playmaking cornerback.
That is a big statement to be making with very little evidence of it up to this point. And look, I'm sure that's what everyone hopes for in this building and that roots for this team. But the safest money is with Tyus Bowser. And I think you're right that Marlon Humphrey's going to get on the field. But you guys know really well and good that the adjustment for some of these corners, even coming from the SEC, is really difficult.
It's a tougher adjustment than outside linebacker.
And even playing, you play a team like Pittsburgh now, if you've got Jimmy on Antonio Brown, then is he going up against Martavis Bryant if Carr's hurt? Yeah. I mean, that is a challenge that I don't think he's seen. The name that I, and probably it's just because I root for interesting, I mean, Jalen Hill's going to have some shots here, whether it be at slot, filling in. I mean, so I think in terms of rookie, that'll make some splash plays that could at least command some attention in this department. I think that would be great.
That would be interesting.
But I think of this class, which we think is strong, and maybe Tim Williams too, everybody seems to think, at least from what I've read, you guys are here every day, is that they didn't use him a bunch. He's still trying to figure things out. But once they can just sort of tee him off, maybe he picks up some sack numbers that make him a guy that would, at the end of the year, you say, well, Tim Williams is probably the most productive of this rookie class.
I think, I think they're going to probably use him late in games to really, I mean, not just save him to the fourth quarter, but I think that he will be used particularly when the defense is tired late in the game. Last year, I think that was the problem. The pass rush really lost its teeth late in games, and I think that they drafted Tim Williams to come in there and say, you know what, go get the quarterback. Because I agree with you. They've been trying to turn him into an all-around linebacker in preseason and training camp, and once they just let him off the leash and he has one job and one job only, I think that's when he's going to thrive. All right, so let's go through now. We get into some stat predictions. Yeah. Kind of easier. We'll go through those a little quicker. All right. Who will lead the team in receiving yards? I think we're on the same page here.
I think that's Mike Wallace.
Mike Wallace, I agree.
I think he's going to go over 1,000 again.
Yeah. I mean, he barely got over it last year.
Yeah.
Just quick
I think he'll be flirting with 1,000.
Because I'm more curious about where you got Macklin. What number, if you had to attach a number to Jeremy Macklin, would you? It's so difficult because we haven't seen Joe really throw to him.
Yeah. I think he's more in that 800 range.
I was going to say more in the 600 to 700 range.
If you get 800, I think you're having a good...
I think it's
been worth the investment.
6 and 7.
Yeah, and I think Perriman is also right in that mix, too. That's like that's the ultimate wild card for this receiving
corps.
Well,
if Perriman and Macklin equal what could be like a 1,000-plus receiver and then Woodhead's doing up, then you're okay.
Yeah, I think that they definitely will. I think when you add up Macklin and Perriman at the end of the year, you'll be over 1,000.
I mean, he'd be like 1,500, but I mean, 1,000 doesn't really do much for you. But
right. I think that Perriman probably puts up close to 500, 600, and Macklin's probably 600, 700.
Yeah, I would go a little bit more, probably for both of them, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that. You like that passing game. I'm going, they're going to run the ball a lot more this year.
They are. They are going to run the ball a lot more.
All right. Who will lead the team in receptions?
I'm going to go with Danny Woodhead.
Yeah, offensive MVP, Danny Woodhead.
Impossible to argue with that. And I think that's okay to our previous discussion. Yeah. It's okay if your offense can still be potent if he's leading in receptions. Yeah. My concern is if he's your MVP.
Yeah. If you're in a PPR league fantasy, you should be drafting Danny Woodhead, by the way.
Here's the thing with Woodhead real quick. I do have concerns about durability over the course of a season. I mean, he played one preseason game and played like 6 snaps, and then he was injured for 2 weeks. Now he's back out there at practice.
And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I feel like, especially in our line of work and for fans, I think you have to have two separate conversations. Obviously, everything that we're saying here is always caveated by if they stay healthy.
Right.
Like, we could, I think it's a good thing to bring up, especially with an older back that's been dinged up and coming off an ACL. But, like, everything is subject to change based off of injury.
Yeah, for sure. All right, how many passing yards does Joe Flacco have?
What did he have last year?
4,300 is what I've got here.
I think that he's lower than that. I think he's just over 4,000.
Yeah, I said 4,000.
Yeah. 4,001 passing yards. So he crosses that barrier, but
I mean, he chucked it. He led the league, I want to say.
In most attempts.
In attempts last year.
Yeah.
That will not happen this year.
What's the most important number, though, in terms of Joe?
It's touchdowns, interceptions.
Okay. So it's the turnover ratio.
Which was last year. Do you have it right
now? Yeah, he had 20 and 15. So 20 touchdowns, 15 interceptions.
He's got to be more in the 25-10 range.
Yeah.
He needs to improve that number for sure.
Totally agree.
How many rushing yards does Terrence West have?
Well, we said that the Ravens are going to run the ball more. Uh-huh. Right? So I agree with that. I don't think he's going to be quite over 1,000.
Really?
I think that he's going to be around 800. Well, I've said before that I think he has the ability to be a 1,000-yard rusher. Uh-huh. But what we've seen out here in training camp and in the preseason, it doesn't look like going into the season the rushing game is going to blow the doors off. I think that it's going to be better than it was last year. I definitely think it's going to be better than it was last year, ranked 28th in the league last year. So I don't think it's going to be 28th. But I don't know that they're going to be able. And the other thing, too, is like Buck Allen came on strong, and maybe it's more of a by committee. I mean,
Woodhead's going to get some carries.
Danny Woodhead,
he's going to get some carries.
Offensive MVP, he's got to get his carries.
He's going to need him if he wants to win that award.
right. Now, last year, West also had Kenneth Dixon eaten into his carries. So, you know.
Not for a portion of the season.
Not for the first four games.
And then even when Kenneth Dixon came back, he took him until about midway through the season.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that last year when Terrence West put up, 700 some, he also had a guy eating into it.
I think he's going to be right around the same as he was last year.
Yeah, I agree. All right, who will lead the Ravens in sacks this year?
Well, we already talked about Judon having a great breakout season, but he's not going to pass Old Faithful.
Terrell Suggs?
The Wiley veteran. He had eight last year, Terrell Suggs, and I think that he will still be the leader in this category. He had eight. I think he's 8 to 10.
I'm going Judon. I think Judon edges out Suggs. I think it's a close battle all year, but I think he gets him.
Double digits?
I put Judon in the 8 to 10. I think that Suggs is, they are looking to give him more, spell him a little bit more. I think that was part of the reason why they brought in Bowser. Part of the reason why they brought in Tim Williams was to give Terrell Suggs a little more time off in pass rush situations. We all know Terrell Suggs, at this point of his career, his best attribute might be his smarts.
His mind.
He can read the offense and tell the defense what is coming, convey that to his teammates. And just his run-stuffing ability, just his knack for sniffing stuff out, little screens, things like that. I mean, he is great on first and second down. He's still really good on third down, but I think that he's going to get some relief in that area, and Judon will not. I think Judon will be let off the chain in that area.
I'm curious, Evan, when you go around the country every week and talk to different coaches, whether you're preparing for a Ravens game, this is when it would come up. Do you get the sense from other coaches and offensive coordinators that Suggs is still a feared player that they kind of game plan against all week?
I think fear is always a sensitive term. I've only heard a few coaches actually sort of admit to being that concerned. It's kind of a funny thing in our business when you ask people questions, I always leave out the word concern because they always hit, the second they hear concern, they turn their brain off.
Yeah.
We always know that Ed Reed was the guy that, and I remember teams having that approach where they would admit to fear. I think with Suggs, it's more to the fact that they feel like they have to take care of him first,
okay,
and then make decisions afterwards, which falls into that category of concern or prioritize. They prioritize Terrell Suggs above all else in that front. And then to the picks, I think your point is the safest, but I would agree that Suggs is still in a position to, you hate to say fall, he almost falls into like 7 sacks.
He does.
If he gets 3 more, then he's at 10.
All right, yeah. Yeah. All right, who will lead the Ravens in interceptions this season?
Well, that's my defensive MVP, Eric Weddle.
I'm going to agree with that.
Yeah, what did he have last year? I think he had 3 or 4 last year, so.
Dropped about 2 more.
He did drop a few of them.
Some gimmies.
Yeah, and you know, he's been working on that jugs we're seeing this offseason maybe a little bit.
I think that he's going to get a number of tip balls. I think the pressure up front that's a lot improved is just going to create more under-stress throws from quarterbacks where they kind of sail him and he can be on the back end. I think also the addition of Tony Jefferson playing a little bit more in the box, enabling Eric Weddle to be more of that rangy safety, will lead to more interceptions with Weddle. And let's be honest, Brandon Carr and Jimmy Smith are not interception cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. You know, they are going to get some PBUs. They can be lockdown physical guys, good press corners, but they're not guys who take a lot of chances, who get a lot of picks, make a lot of plays like that. So I think Eric Weddle's probably your leader.
Right, better players around him, better pass rush, yep. And if he makes up for the drops that he had last year, then he's already passed his total from last season.
Yep.
It's a safe pick.
Yeah. Where will the defense finish this year ranked?
I say top 3.
You gotta give me a position. You can't say top 3. Give me a number.
Okay, 3.
What? And
boo. But I'm going 1.
Is this yards per game allowed? Like this is another thing I think we need
is
to
yards.
Come down. Yards allowed. I'll go 4.
4.
4.
Who are the 3 that are better? Can you name them off top of your off top?
Well,
of
there's Seattle. You can say Seattle. There's Houston.
Texans.
But like I think scoring defense is
more important. I kind of agree too.
And I'm not sure I think they're still in that I almost top like, five range, but like that's where the way that New England plays, and I think Pittsburgh's gonna be much better this year defensively.
I almost feel like the Ravens might be better off rank higher in yards allowed than scoring, because I think the Ravens defense might be on the field a lot, and thus in, well, I guess that it hurts you in yards too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm going number one.
I'm going number one
in yards allowed.
In yards.
Yeah. I think we need to keep that as a consistent thing.
I'm going number one.
Look, they could be. I mean, when you get into one, two, or three, we're kind of splitting hairs. But I think
but they were number one through, 12 weeks last year?
Yeah, and they finished seventh
like
or
five?
Eighth. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But they were really good last year, and then they kind of collapsed at the end of the season when they were worn down. But we talked about this on Unscripted this week. Their big priority this offseason was to get the pieces that they can now win those games. If you get back into that same situation against Pittsburgh and there's that last drive at the end of the game, they have the horses that they're not going to give up an 80-yard drive to Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers. They have the pieces to avoid that this year. So I think that they're going to be a great defense.
Yeah. All right, last one. Where does the offense finish the year ranked?
Well, you got to get a number. Let's go ahead and hear your number.
Last year it was 17th.
Okay.
This year 17th. I think they match it.
I'm going to go.
They don't improve on it.
I'm going to go a little higher than that. I think I'll go 15th.
Okay. We'll go right in the middle of the pack.
I'll go right in the middle of the pack. We said it yesterday when we did Unscripted. Great defense, great special teams, solid offense, and going right in the middle of the pack is I think, well, if the Ravens are the 15th best offense,
yeah,
in the league,
I think that's the way to look at it. Somewhat arbitrary to say, okay, they're two play, but 15, if you're in the middle of the pack, which 17 was, but then that's where you need to take the deeper dive into what numbers are they strong in? Are they getting some big plays? I mean, the yards per game can be inflated by a lot of passes to last year Dennis Pitta or this year Danny. I mean, there needs to be some explosiveness to this game. And the running game can't be 28.
I don't think that this offense is going to be
The more interesting question. The running game has to be in that 15
it
range
has to
as
improve.
Well.
Yep. But I don't think that this is going to be an offense that is going to march down the field for 10 play drives. That's not how it's going to win. I think that from the offense, you get a couple big plays a game that puts you in position for a touchdown or some field goals, and that's a success. I mean, it is built for the big play this year with Breshad, with Mike Wallace.
And Macklin.
I mean, those are three big play wide receivers. Danny Woodhead can be your guy in third and three that can move the chains and things like that. But primarily, I expect them to be taking some shots on offense. Now, the difficult part where there's going to be some rub in the passing game is if you're doing that too much and you're just getting three and outs and putting that defense right back on the field. There's going to be some groans about this defense is playing too many snaps if you're just trying to be a big attack offense.
I also would say this, though. I thought what we saw last year was when the big play was some of the most effective was not long passes down the field. It was those slants over the middle where Breshad Perriman gets it and then goes 70 yards. Same thing with Mike Wallace. They need to hit those guys in space and let them make some plays. All right, let's go a little broader here.
Okay. And I want we're to, off the predictions?
Yeah, we're off predictions. So okay. I won that.
Oh, man, I forgot to. Dang it.
You guys have found this whole new layer to the prediction business that we love in this in media, is that we're starting to see who wins before the prediction drive.
Right, who has the best predictions?
Right.
Before the result.
But, Evan, we talked about this when we were doing Unscripted this week, and you made this point, which I thought was interesting, that you feel like the first quarter of the season is going to really decide so much of where this thing goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's somewhat obvious because three out of their first four opponents are in the division. So if this team's 1-3 and the one win came against Jacksonville, or even if it came against Cleveland, I mean, the road ahead, because then after week four, you have the trip to Oakland. I just think, and I try to fight that, oh, it's really important for the team to start 3-1 or 4-0 or 2-0. Right. Because of course it is. I mean, but I think for everything that surrounds this group and what they dealt with last year and Joe's uncertainty, if things get off to a rough start, I think there's an energy that could be really negative, but then the reality of the division. I mean, I just can't think of a year where they've had three out of their first four games in the division.
Yeah, if you get behind the eight ball in the division, it's going to be really, really
because
tough.
That's kind of always where they've made up ground in that middle of the year and then even late in the year in years past.
We have to beat the Browns, and I think you have to beat the Jags in London. I mean, the Jags on paper right now, the way they look, not a particularly great team.
And I think it's fair to say, and this is all predicting or projecting, but it sets up nice for them because Cincinnati looks a bit, you know, haggard right now, mm-hmm. based off of no Adam Jones, no Vontaze Perfect, John Ross is a rookie, who knows right. what he would have done, right. but right. it's just another guy that's not there for them. So they're getting Cincinnati in maybe a vulnerable situation that they wouldn't get in week six when they play
now,
them.
Now the Bengals feel like they're getting the Ravens in a vulnerable situation just because when Joe Flacco hasn't played.
Yes, but right. At least he's there. I mean, you know Vontaze isn't there. You know yeah. Adam Jones isn't there. And then the Browns are the Browns, and it's at home, I think, is
yeah.
probably the security blanket you take into that game.
Right. When you look at the AFC picture right now in terms of who's going to win the wild card and who's going to be your division leaders, I mean, the Ravens, I think, are definitely in that talk. The Bengals are, too. I mean, the Bengals are going to be,
AFC
I
West
think, right
scares
there.
You, though.
I know, AFC three West. Teams could go from the
yeah,
West.
Yeah, they're very good. Having seen the Chargers now, they're going to be much better. Kansas City, people expect to be what they've been, which is right. consistently
good.
In that 10-6, 11-5, and the Raiders should be very good.
Yep.
So that could be the AFC North of old, where three teams get in.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting. So yeah, that's why I look at this Bengals game. If you're talking about if two teams are getting in from the AFC North, it's going to be, you know, I think the Steelers are probably going to make the playoffs. I mean,
bold
prediction.
Great.
I think they're a pretty darn good
team. Right. They got a great quarterback.
Not to say that I don't think the Ravens
maybe the best running back in the league.
I think they have the best offense in the NFL, and that includes the New England Patriots.
Yes. Yeah. So we got into this a little bit on Unscripted about week one and what we should expect from Joe Flacco and the offense. You know, we just talked about the Bengals hitting at the Ravens at the right time. Do you feel like, and I said this on the show, I'm not giving them an excuse. I'm not giving them a pass for week one. Where do you guys kind of stand on that?
Well, I think you have to sort of really hone in on what my expectations are extremely low. Mm-hmm. So whether that's giving them excuses.
In week one or in general
in
for
week
this
one,
offense?
In week one for okay. this offense and for Joe Flacco. I'm a big believer, especially kind of being around this team on the periphery and seeing how Joe develops and when he's playing well. He's a guy that practices. He's a guy who likes rhythm. He likes to not have to think while he's out there mm-hmm. and likes to just play off of instinct and timing and all those things. And he's not going to have it. I mean, that can't happen in 10 days. So that to me means everything shrinks and everything becomes very limited in what it is you can do. And I just don't expect things to go smoothly at all.
Maybe that's not a bad thing against the Cincinnati Bengals defense for Joe. I mean, Joe has not had his best games against the Bengals.
Because you think in years past he's tried to do too much?
I can't pinpoint on it anything.
I don't know that he's been trying to do too much.
But I could take the flip side of that and say, well, if Marvin Lewis knows he's dealing with a team that's got a small deck to play with, it makes his job that much easier. And that
you
makes
just
them
have to
that
win
much
at
more
what you're doing. Even if they have a better idea of what's coming, you got to win at what you're doing, I think, is what it is.
Well, it goes back to the run game. I mean,
it goes back to the run game, and you hope you can hit a couple big plays.
Yeah, and then you hope that Cincinnati's offense doesn't hit the 75-yard bomb to A.J. Green in the fourth quarter like they've done against the Ravens.
Yeah,
it's a manufacturing a win with everybody else making the big play and the offense just kind of holding on.
But here's the thing about it to me about Joe Flacco and saying, like, you know, he hasn't had practice and all that stuff. I understand and I agree that it limits him. But Case Keenum a couple years ago for the Houston Texans, they signed him out of a hunting blind. He was in a tree hunting deer 4 days before he took on the Ravens. And he beat him. You know,
so are you asking Joe to do that?
Yes. I'm not asking
but
Joe
that's not
to put up 350, three touchdowns and no picks. I'm asking Joe to play well enough to win. And I think with this defense, it doesn't have to be that great, but he can't lose the game. I don't think that, like, if he goes out there and throws picks, right? If he throws two picks, that I'm like, well, it's because he didn't have timing. No, you should be able to protect the football at a bare minimum, even if you haven't been practicing.
Yeah, but
right?
I think what you're assuming is that, like, you're operating under the assumption that the health is not a concern. That, like, for Case Keenum,
I am taking the health out of it for this game.
I don't think you can take that out of it and say, like, 100% it's not going to be an issue. Don't even consider that. Maybe it's not, and he feels great, and he's 100% good to go, and he's not even thinking about it. But
right.
to go there and to assume that that's going to be the case is a leap that I don't think we can make
right
now.
So you think you're... Yeah, but I mean, it's legitimate to be worried about the back during this game. I think he's going to be so hyped up on adrenaline and whatever that he's going to be playing this game.
But there's a trickle-down effect,
and
we saw this last year, where when there is any sort of... whether even if he's not thinking about it or he's not feeling hurt, it affects his footwork at times, and that's the timing I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the crossing route to Mike Wallace.
It's two different things. It's chemistry with receivers and Joe's health.
And his, for a guy whose footwork has been under the microscope the last few years, especially ever since the knee injury, to not be playing in a live pocket at all until week one, where all those things are flying and you're jacked up and you're ready to go, that to me leads to balls going into the sideline.
He wasn't throwing until last week. It's not just like he's been, he wasn't throwing the football. Yeah, but Case Keenum could throw. They weren't telling him he was throwing passes to deer from up in that blind.
We might need to put the tape in on this Case Keenum game.
Right, exactly.
I think I'm remembering the defense playing.
It was a defensive dominant showdown. Yeah.
I remember a shot down the sideline on the first drive. And that's all I'm asking. Make a couple good throws, deep throws, hit a couple big plays, and we're good. All right, before we let Evan go, first I want to talk to you a little bit about your career and your rise, because you have lacked Garrett and I in the professional standards. And it shouldn't be surprising, because Evan's probably the best looking one at the table here. It's Evan 1, me 2, you 3. I think Dennis Pitta would agree. Evan's kind of a Dennis Pitta kind of guy. The hair's always on point, you know. So anyway, Evan, you were the number 2 at CSN years.
Not even? No, I'll give you, I'll peel back the curtain a little bit on that. So, and this is more fun to me than all the stuff I do now, which is great and I'm extremely thankful for, and it's awesome. But, and it's good advice, and I'm sure you guys have given it to people too. In this business, you've got to kind of find a way to get in because it's so hard to get in, and there's never been a profession where there's more of, oh, we need somebody with experience, sorry. It's like, well, how are you supposed to get experience if no one's going to hire anyone that doesn't have experience? So what I did at CSN is, I was an intern, and then I was out of college, so I told them I was getting college credit for it when I wasn't, and I told my boss that, and after a month, I was like, look, man, I'm not really getting credit for this. Do you need me to take a community college class? He's like, nah, you're good. One of the reasons why is because I could go every day. Everybody else had class to go to, so I just went every day. So this is at the studio. And once I got to the studio, I kind of got to see how things were operating, got to learn everything about the sort of the mechanics of TV. And then I got to meet a guy named Brent Harris and Mark Fogelsong, who were the Baltimore Bureau of Comcast Sportsnet. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was they covered everything in Baltimore, the big thing being the Ravens, obviously. So I remember meeting them at a hockey game, and I said, hey, I live in Baltimore. Can I just tag along with you guys?
Yeah.
Can I just go with you and watch you guys work and see what it is you do? And they were like, all right. But eventually, I went with him a couple times, and I'm like, oh, this guy's not that bad to hang out with. Mark, everybody called Deuce, said, hey, you know, pick up that light. And I'm a former college athlete, pretty good shape. I could lift a lot of stuff. I could carry a lot of stuff.
Your big break.
So I could just, my value became that I would show up whenever they asked me, and I would carry everything.
You were a pack mule.
I was a pack mule. So this was early on, so I would come to Ravens training camp when it was in Westminster and carry all the lights out, set up the live shot. Mm-hmm. So this is how I got in at CSN, but I wasn't getting paid for any of this. I was still an intern. I eventually became a freelance production assistant, but I only got paid when I would go to the studio and log games and do all the grunt work that in television people know that work in it is behind the scenes. And they do a lot of the stuff to make the shows go on the air. But whenever I had an off day, I'd come out to see what Brent and Deuce were doing out with the Ravens. So I sort of became, and this is where I saw met you guys. And then eventually, it was right when the digital media thing was happening.
Yeah.
They had nothing to put on the website. And so I was like, hey, can I just do stuff that we put only on the website? And they initially were like, no. And then finally one guy was like, it was Brent and Deuce saying, look, we're not going to create any more content for the website. So if you want anything, and that was them doing me a solid.
Right.
Like, Evan's doing it.
Right.
So long story short, that when I was here all those years, and it's good advice to young people in any business, but dress, and you make fun of the way I like in the look, dress for the job.
I'm not making fun of it. I'm jealous of the way you dress.
Dress for the job and approach the job that you have. Do it all for the job you want. Because I could have shown up in jeans and a polo or a t-shirt to lift lights and do all this stuff, but I always came nice button down, maybe a coat on, because I also never knew, hey, maybe I could shoot a stand up and put it on the internet.
Right.
And so I started walking around and people thought, oh, he must be Brent's, you know, number two, or he must be.
You fooled me.
I was never on Comcast Sportsnet until like barely. I mean, I was started doing stuff for CBS before I even, like, CSN threw a couple things on TV every once in a while.
Right.
But I never was a full-time employee there. I was always a freelancer. And I'm very thankful to the Ravens because they also allowed me to be around. Like, they gave me a credential to games. When we were cable partners, they let me fly on the charter. Again, my only value was really carrying lights and carrying cameras and things like that. But it gave me the entree into the sort of being around the NFL.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, and then the CBS thing happened through lacrosse and calling games, but I had a nice resume from doing things here.
Right.
Where they aired, who knows? Did they ever air? Probably not. But I did them, and it was enough for bosses in New York to say, oh, well, let's give them a shot doing college football, and that's kind of where it went from there.
I remember seeing you on, like, during March Madness. I look up the TV, and I'm like, that's Evan. Like, he's doing the post game interview. And I was like, dang, man, he's really making it. You know, it was cool. I was really happy to see that. And now, obviously, you're on the sideline of the Super Bowl. I mean, it's really blown up. It's been really cool to see.
Well, I appreciate it. It's fun. And it's good to know there are some bosses out there. I've had some at CBS, and, you know, there were a couple at CSN, the people here too, where they aren't so reliant on, he was here for 4 years, then he moved to this network for 4 years. If you can do the job, and I mean, I know Harbaugh's big thing is meritocracy.
Yep.
If you're good enough and you're better than somebody we have, or you're like, I don't really care what your past is. And that's, I've benefited from that because I've been given some jobs, especially the last couple, you know, the first few years where I had no business doing them. But then you do them and people are like, oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And we'll keep giving them to you.
Right. They don't post your resume on live TV.
Well, that's the funny thing. It's like, I did graduate from college. This isn't like a George O'Leary situation.
Are you sure? Were you getting college credit?
No.
You had the diploma.
I didn't get credit for that internship, but I did graduate from Delaware. No one has ever asked. It's all about they hit a YouTube link or they put in a DVD. How's he sound? How's he look? You know, sign him up.
For sure.
When you talk about dressing for the job that you want. What do you think of Minx's new jeans here?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Let's back it up here. So we're getting ready to shoot Unscripted, Evan being the host, of course. And I come in and I'm like, guys, check out my new jeans. Because they said, wear nice jeans on set, right? And I didn't really own a pair of nice jeans. I'd always looked at Evan's last year and I was like, he has nice jeans. So I'm like, I'm gonna go out and buy some. So I head over to Kohl's last minute to go buy some jeans.
Hello.
I have a shirt to return. I return the shirt, they're only gonna give me $5 for it, which I'm bummed. I grabbed some jeans I thought were $30. That's what it said?
Yeah.
Ring them up, $4.80. I went back and got three more, including a duplicate pair of the same ones.
And I want everybody listening to that'll be a poll question next week on Unscripted. Who had the best jeans on the set? And maybe, I mean, you kind of buried the, I mean, it'd been cool to see. Because honestly, I think yours might have looked the best.
They look good.
Thank you.
The model that had them on was rough, but, but they were dark. They had a nice little trim to them. And I was jealous because, as you mentioned, I take pride in my jeans, and I have never gotten, I mean, the tax on some of my jeans is a lot more
higher than $5.
I mean, when you said they were $5.
Will you come clean? Evan, will you come clean on the price of your jeans? Come on.
I told you, I'm happy to. Joe's Jeans, if you're listening, I'd love it. Average is about $150 to $180 bucks a pair.
How many pairs, what's the quick math on that? How many pairs of jeans can I get for
that? You get 30 pairs of jeans. That's awesome.
Nice, well that's awesome. Evan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
really
for having me, guys.
It.
You guys do a great job and it's been fun getting to know you over the years.
All right, cool. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, Evan.
Speaking of sponsors, Garrett, we already have a phenomenal sponsor of the Lounge Podcast, and that's Papa John's. And I want to tell you about two deals, all right? You can order the Ravens Flock Special all season long. You get a large specialty pizza and a large two-topping pizza with promo code RAVENSFLOCK at PapaJohns.com. That's not all, Garrett, all right? The day after every Ravens win, you can get 50% off regular menu price online orders with promo code RAVENS50
at papajohns.com. So that's some good deals right there. I'm gonna be eating a lot of Papa John's pizza this year, a lot of half off Papa John's pizza. Just like my jeans deal, you can get a great deal at Papa John's. These jeans, by the way, you think they're a little too short?
They're a little short.
These ones honestly didn't fit.
They're only
$32.30, but they're $5. I said, let's go for it.
Yeah, exactly. You can't pass up a pair of jeans for $4.80.
So thank you for listening. Once again, you can always reach us at thelounge@ravens.nfl.net, and we'll be back with you next week.